on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to the Friday, February 13th. That's right, Friday the 13th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and I'll be with you for the next 54 minutes as we dissect what happened in the market today, go through a relatively important, I would say, main focus point, and a bunch of topics that I brought to discuss. One other thing we're going to be doing over this next hour is what we do each and every day, and that is answer your finance and investment questions. So before we talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics, why don't we start by answering a caller question now?
Hey guys, Chuck from Clayton. Question on UNM, Unum Group. Whatever you can tell me about, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Ticker UNM, which is Unum Group. What do they do? Well, they are a workplace benefits provider, so they offer group long-term and short-term disability, group life, accidental death and dismemberment, as well as some supplemental voluntary products like dental, vision, and critical illnesses. Now, in terms of company size, this company is a $11.9 billion market cap company, and year-to-date, it's down about 7.56%. Down about 5% over the past 52 weeks. Now, one of the reasons why it's down is, well, Q4 2025 had a bit of an earnings miss, reported 192 earnings per share versus the 212 consensus, missed by about 20 cents, with revenue slightly below estimates as well. But most importantly, we know this, markets are forward-looking. And so what really started to drive this thing a bit downward was, well, the company guided fiscal year 2026 earnings per share at $8.60 to $8.90, while the estimate was $8.91. So a slight miss on forward-looking guidance as well. But, you know, they do have aggressive capital returns here. Return on equity sitting at about 7% for this business. And over the past couple years, I mean, stock returns not been bad. 2022, up 67%, up 10% in 2023, up 61% in 2024. It did have solid full year fundamentals, but most importantly, I would say, aside from, you know, decent dividend yield, 2.35%, very low debt to equity, about 0.32. One of the reasons why we have this position in one of our strategies is because it's a bit of a defensive position that gives you a solid dividend yield. So in one of our income focus strategies, we actually do hold this name. It has a beta of about 0.2, meaning it does not move as aggressively, as volatile as the overall market. So it's a pretty uncorrelated market name that has grown year over year in terms of revenue at about 4% for an annualized basis, which for an insurance company is pretty solid, steady, predictable revenue growth. Now, a little bit of hesitancy here, of course, with the Q4 miss, with the soft guidance moving forward, but overall, still a solid name fundamentally, which offers, like I said, great diversification positioning. That is UNM, Unum Group. Thanks for the call. We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you all today. First things first, my main focus point concerns this topic. Housing, the spring season starts now. Historically, the real estate spring buying season starts the weekend after the Super Bowl. So we'll take a look at inventory data to see if sellers are finally coming off the sidelines. We'll also touch on a rally in corporate bonds and how that is starting to prompt a little bit of bubble fears. We also will touch on Donald Trump's plans to roll back tariffs on metals and aluminum goods. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about how companies are starting to delay IPOs in 2026 because volatility is, Well, it's been testing some valuations in the market overall. We also have plenty of questions to answer, including a couple from our voice bank, one on Amazon, ticker AMZN, and one on Fastenal Company, ticker FAST, as well as some comments and questions that came in from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. Hopefully we hear from some of you live over the next 50 minutes. Alrighty, we're headed into a break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the Invest Talk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream, or maybe AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. But we'll talk about today's market activity.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
I'm looking at an ETF. It's Goldman Sachs, NASDAQ.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
If that would be a good hold to have in a Roth IRA for the long-term horizon.
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
This isn't really a copper play. This is a iron ore play with some aluminum copper.
If you're looking at ETFs that hold so few names that are so top heavy, I think it is probably ill-advised to pay an expense ratio like this in order to get exposure that you could really get yourself.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Hey guys, Brian from North Carolina here. I'm a big fan of the show. I haven't missed an episode in over 5 years.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you want to get through to me live before the weekend begins. But as always, let's talk a little bit about the market today. Dow up 10 basis points, S&P 500 up 5 basis points, NASDAQ down 22, Russell 2000 up 1.18%. So, I mean, across the board, for the most part, finished higher, though you did see major indices giving up some of that midday strength into the close. But at the same time, breadth was positive. The equal weight S&P logged solid gains. So, while major indices were down for the week, the RSP equal to S&P 500 actually eked out a 30 basis point gain. Big tech was mostly lower, NVIDIA and Apple, the notable Mag 7 decliners, while other underperformers included large cap banks, insurers, private equity, airlines, industrial metals. On the other side, though, areas of strength, software, clawing back some previous losses, semi-caps, networking and communication names, home builders, and managed care. On the bond side, Treasury's a bit firmer. You did see the curve flattening with yields down anywhere from 5 to 6 basis points focused on the short end of the curve. At the same time, the dollar, little changed on the day. Gold, however, up 2%, silver up 3%, and crude oil just squeaking out a positive day up 10 basis points. What did we see today? Well, we saw cyclicals working. We saw defensives working, so broadening out of trade. We saw a small cap rally. We saw continued Mag 7 sluggishness, a software bounce, cooler headline CPI, bit of rally in the rates, a crypto bounce. So a lot of big developments from a trading perspective, and that comes at the end of a week in which AI was increasingly framed as a broader market overhang via the underperformance of the top 7 names. We talked about unrelenting disruption and a meaningful ramp up in worries about how white collar unemployment might be affected by AI. On the data front, headline January CPI up 20 basis points, a bit cooler than December's 30 basis points, which was also the consensus. And a lot of that was helped by lower energy prices. On the core side, you saw core CPI up 30 basis points in line with consensus in the prior month's pace. On the year-over-year basis, 2.5% was the increase, and that's actually the lowest increase we've seen in 5 years. The report, largely in line with expectations, though, there had been some concerns about upside risks from residual seasonality. We did talk about that last week on the show. Nothing else on the economic calendar today, and frankly, looking ahead to next week, fairly quiet overall because Monday, of course, is a trading holiday, President's Day. On Tuesday, though, we'll get Empire Manufacturing and the Housing Market, Empire Manufacturing and Housing Market Index. Housing starts, building permits, durable good orders, and industrial production, as well as the FOMC minutes, will be out on Wednesday. Trade balance claims, Philly Fed, and pending home sales out on Thursday. PCE inflation, flash PMIs, and new home sales will round out next week on Friday. Let's keep things moving and answer a fresh question that came in earlier to our Invest Talk YouTube comment section question bank. As I'm sure you're aware, because we mentioned it, I would say from time to time, we do have a YouTube channel, Invest Talk with 2 T's, and I actually want to announce a new thing we're going to be doing. And that is, every Friday, we will have a focus point, as always, but we're going to expand on that focus point. We're going to deep dive, give you 20 to 25 minutes of just really deep insight into whatever our Friday focus point is moving forward. So the first deeper focus video will be hitting sometime soon, if not this weekend, on Monday. So look for that on the Invest Talk YouTube channel. But back to the question at hand, this question on ticker SNDK. It says, what do you think of SanDisk? Big run-up, AI memory related, I'm guessing, recent earnings beat, and strong expected earnings. How do the technicals look to you? And what would be good entry slash fair value? Well, SanDisk Corporation is one of the five largest suppliers of NAND flash memory semiconductors globally. It's vertically integrated, and they produce substantially all of its flash chips at its manufacturing sites in Japan via its joint venture with Kioxia. Then they repackage it into SSDs for consumer electronics, external storage, and cloud storage. Currently trading at about $626 per share. Started actually trading at the beginning of this year when it spun off from Western Digital. Sitting at about $93 billion market cap. But the thing that really strikes me here is it's incredibly volatile. Beta sitting at 2.4. So right now, you know, it's trading at roughly 15 times forward-looking earnings despite this massive run-up that we saw. Does not pay a dividend in terms of its balance sheet. Pretty solid balance sheet, debt to equity sitting at about 0.14, current ratio 3.3. So in terms of its debts, its balance sheet is clean. It can handle the debt that it has taken on. Now, what's been driving it? Well, parabolic AI-driven NAND super cycle. This is a big one. SanDisk is up over 160% in 2026 alone, 163.95%. It's up 1,717% from the beginning of 2025. You heard those numbers correctly. Over the past 52 weeks, it's up 1,640%. And the rally is being driven by surging demand for flash storage from AI data centers, which require massive amounts of fast, reliable energy. And so fast forward, or I guess rewind in this case, to Q2 fiscal year 2026 earnings, which was in December. Blew guidance out of the water, blew results out of the water, not just for December, but guidance for March. Earnings doubled in December from the previous quarter or from the previous year. March quarter guidance was more than triple the consensus estimate. This data center revenue is exploding. It surged 64% year over year, accelerating the company's shift towards those high margin enterprise storage solutions. Gross margins expanded. Gross margins expanded to over 50%. Net margin, 38.6% is where it's projected to be this upcoming year. Now, there is a bear case, right? It's a cyclical commodity. The business, you know, at its core, SanDisk, they sell commodity-like flash memory and offers little differentiation or pricing power. It exposes it to volatile cyclicality. Stock is up a lot. That is a big run-up. That kind of move tends to invite sharp corrections. And you have competing companies, Samsung, rushing new products into production, which did pressure the stock earlier in the week. And you saw a bit more pressure today. It is priced, like I've said before, to perfection at this point. If you have a big slowdown in CapEx, certainly this one will hit. And so I like the name because of where it is, because of how it fits into this theme, but given the run-up and given the volatility here, again, a beta of over 2, it looks to me to be ripe for a correction. Either way, I'd keep it on my watch list. That is SanDisk, ticker SD or SNDK. We're headed into a break. Still to come, my main focus point on housing and how the spring season starts now. As always, more answers to your finance and investment questions and hopefully some live calls before we head off for the weekend.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP. On the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
Let's talk a little bit about housing. Now, the U.S. housing market it's sending a bit of a clear signal. And that signal is probably best described as the word patience. The typical home that actually sells is now taking upwards of 70 days to go under contract. That is the longest stretch we have seen in roughly 7 years. Now, what that's showing to me is that buyers are no longer rushing. They are weighing options. They are negotiating harder. And because of this, pending home sales, well, it fell 5.1% year over year in early February. That's the sharpest decline in more than a year. Now, on a macro level, the weakness is widespread, with pending home sales dropping in nearly every major market. In fact, get this, only a handful of cities manage gains. Most have seen meaningful pullbacks. Oakland, Minneapolis, they posted some of the steepest year-over-year declines in buyer activity. And so the broader takeaway is that demand has cooled noticeably, compared to last year. At the same time, well, supply conditions, they're starting to shift. There are now 5.5 months of supply on the market, the highest level in 7 years. Anything above 4 to 5 months, what that usually means is you're moving towards buyer-friendly conditions. Now, that shift in leverage, it's starting to show up in a lot of places, but it's really starting to show up in pricing behavior. Just 19% of homes are selling above list price. That's down significantly from what we saw last year. The average sale-to-list ratio sits under 98%, reinforcing sellers are having to negotiate. Price growth itself has slowed to a crawl. The median sale price is up just 1.2% year over year. Now, mortgage rates have eased a bit from last year's highs, but they still remain roughly double pandemic era lows, meaning that the average 30-year fixed rate is hovering just above 6%. And so that's providing some relief because we've seen it tilt downward slightly, but it's certainly not a full reset. At the same time, monthly mortgage payments, well, they've actually declined about 3.8% year over year because of these rates coming down, because of price growth starting to cool. One other thing that's helped, wage growth, roughly 4%. That's helping with affordability, albeit in a modest way. But at the same time, psychological headwinds, they're still there. Concerns about job security, economic uncertainty, they're causing many buyers to pause. Add in severe winter weather in parts of the country, and that's temporarily dampened activity as well. And so leading indicators are pointing to, understandably, because of all of these factors, softer momentum going forward, with mortgage purchase applications and online search activity down month over month. Touring activity has ticked up slightly this year, but nowhere near the pace we saw last year. Interestingly, new listings also declining, meaning that sellers are becoming cautious as well. And that dynamic is starting to keep inventory from ballooning, even as demand slows. Now, despite softer demand, there are still significantly more sellers than active buyers in the market. That imbalance is giving motivated buyers room to negotiate below asking price. Some agents report early signs of spring season momentum starting to build beneath the surface. So the big question for investors and for homeowners is whether this remains a buyer's market or if improving affordability and seasonal demand will tighten conditions again as 2026 unfolds. As I mentioned, this story about housing is our first deeper focus video in our new series. So if you're interested, as everybody should be, about the housing market in 2026, the regional disparity, and what you should think about if you're looking to buy or sell your home, don't forget to check out the InvestTalk YouTube channel, where we will have an extended video on this topic coming soon. As it is Friday, I want to briefly mention the newest KPP Premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow on Friday. In the KPP Insights section, we discussed deferred sales trusts. It is a service that we offer for our clients. And for those that are selling their business, selling their homes, what it can do is give you a very solid tax benefit by making you not recognize all those capital gains up front and at the same time. In the stock ideas section, we mentioned a tech company as well as a consumer goods company. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on a really important part of investing that I think people don't talk about enough, and that is assessing the risks in your portfolio. Great topics on deck for this week. So if you're interested in learning more, visit investtalk.com and hit subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox on Saturday mornings. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Monday is a market holiday. So we'll be posting a new best of show. But then on Tuesday, we will dig into this story, the custom chip war. It's not just NVIDIA anymore. We will discuss the earnings from companies like ARM and Broadcom, analyzing the shift towards custom silicon designed specifically for distinct AI models. That's coming up on Tuesday. For now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, I had a two-part question. First part is, with a lot of the tech stocks down significantly, are you guys looking for like value within the tech space, or are you just, I don't say staying away, but continuing to wait? Or do you think there's opportunities now? And then the second part is, do you think Amazon looks attractive right now, or would you still be patient or just look elsewhere? And I'll listen on the show. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Regarding the tech stock piece, yeah, we're certainly looking for opportunities now. There are names on our watch list that we're starting to allocate slowly towards. But at the same time, you don't really know if things are going to go deeper, when rotations start, when rotations end. And so one of the best things you can do is enter positions gradually over time. And so that's kind of what we're starting to do with some of those names on our watch list within the tech space that have looked pretty expensive for quite some time. Now, regarding Amazon, I don't need to tell you what Amazon does. One of the leading, or actually the leading online retailer and marketplace for sellers. Of course, they have their streaming service as well. And they're down a bit. I mean, they're currently trading at about 198.79, down from their all-time high of 254 last November. But their market cap still 2.1 trillion. And in terms of relative valuation, looks like they're trading at about 25 times price to forward-looking earnings, which is well below their average of the past 5 years, sitting near their low. And so what's going on here, right? Because this stock has declined for most of the past 10 trading sessions. It's down almost 14% year to date. It's down 13.71% over the past 52 weeks. Underperformed its industry and the S&P, not just this year, but last year as well. I mean, one of the things is CapEx bomb, right? The headline story is Amazon's forecasted CapEx has $200 billion in 2026. I mean, that's a massive jump from $132 billion in 2025. And people were expecting $147 billion. So that's a $50 billion overshoot that understandably is spooking market participants, despite management's confidence in the spend, but at the same time, is management going to come up and say, hey, we're not confident in this extra $50 billion that you guys didn't expect us to spend? And then at the same time, on a backward-looking basis, they missed Q4 earnings. The stock fell roughly 6% after their Q4 report because estimates were missed. Even though the top-line results were solid, sales grew 14% year-over-year, it's still a miss. Now, one of the bright spots is Amazon Web Services, the acceleration, right? Their revenue climbed 24% year-over-year. It is the fastest pace of growth that there's been in the past 3 years. So that's certainly a profit engine, and it is firing. But it's being driven down by the overall AI CapEx debate across the Mag 7, right? Amazon's not alone here. The market is broadly repricing how much is too much. And so you're getting this technical breakdown. From a fundamental perspective, I mean, the company still looks solid. It's still seeing great operating leverage in its e-commerce business, still seeing solid and expanding margins. So the bull case from here is, well, this is one of the most attractive valuations we've seen in history for Amazon, while AWS is accelerating, while margins are expanding. But do we need to be a bit too defensive here? Or rather, do we need to be a bit defensive here because of CapEx? And so Amazon looks attractive to me. This is one of those situations where I would probably start to allocate slowly here because you don't know. You know, you don't want to fully allocate a position here and catch a falling knife when technicals look so poor. But at the same time, you don't know when this rotation is going to stop. Either way, I think over the next 5 years, Amazon is a solid, solid name. Ticker AMZN. Thanks for the call. On Fridays, we generally try to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. Let me hit you with that list right now. The two-year yield, 3.42% today. Last week, that number was 3.502. And 215 weeks back, the number was 0.64. At the same time, the 10-year yield is at 4.066% today, down from last week when it was 4.214, up from 212 weeks ago when it was 1.762. Gold back above $5,000 per ounce, sitting at $50.31 today. That is $93 higher than last week. 28 weeks ago, it was $33.48, and 207 weeks back, it was $18.06. Silver, $77.91 per ounce, $2.07 higher than last week. Way higher than 105 weeks ago when it was $22.80. And higher as well than 199 weeks back when it was $23.94. Oil was selling for $63.05 per barrel today. That is $1.10 less than last week. 73 weeks back, that number was $67.79. And 115 weeks back, that number was $74.30. National average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $2.94 per gallon, a 4-cent increase compared with last week. 141 weeks ago, that number was $3.56. And 189 weeks back, that number was $4.25. In California, $4.56 per gallon is the number, 14 cents higher than the last time we spoke last week. 118 weeks ago, though, that number was $5.32, and 194 weeks ago, that number was $5.87. In comparison, in Missouri, gas is averaging $2.52 per gallon today. That is $2.04 less than gas in California. Looks like we got plenty of time, so let's drop another listener question now.
My name is Richard Hernandez. I am a 22-year-old new investor. I was just calling about a stock called Fast, F-A-S-T, Fastenal. And I was just wondering to get your opinion on it, if you think it's a good company. I know it's, it's gone down a little bit as of lately, but I don't know, just where you think a good buy would be, if you think there would be a buy point possibly. But yeah, if you could just let me know, I'll be listening to it on the podcast. Thank you.
Well, it's always great to hear young investors. So good job of being ahead of the curve. Let's dive into Fastenal Company. Fastenal Company is a $52 billion market cap industrial distributor that really began as a bit of a nuts and bolts retailer, but evolved into more of a one-stop outsourcing partner for industrial customers. So they offer maintenance, repair, and operations supplies. They offer cutting tools. They offer safety equipment, as well as janitorial supplies. Now, their key differentiator, it's more in their on-site model. So once a customer becomes large enough, they install vending machines and their own personnel on-site. Now, these on-site locations, pretty cool. And they actually exceed their branch count. So it's really one of the firm's main focuses for expansion. In terms of relative valuation, sitting at 36.8 times price to forward-looking earnings, certainly still expensive, well over its average of 31, albeit slightly below its high over the past 5 years of 42.5. Margins look solid. Operating margins sitting at about 20%, return on equity at 33.3. That's exactly where it's projected to be next year. And, I mean, it puts it well above its competitors, the next closest one being at 22.5. And so, understandably, it's trading at these higher valuations. Now, over the past year, over the past 52 weeks, it's up 24.11%, up over 1565 this year. And growth is really the story here. 7.7% revenue growth on an annualized basis, going back 5 years. They had strong Q4 organic sales acceleration. Year-over-year organic sales grew 11.1%. They grew top and bottom lines nearly 9% over the full year. Q4 daily sales were up 11%. I mean, that's pretty notable, especially given what has been a sluggish industrial backdrop. Now, you know, there is something on the horizon. You have a bit of a CEO change, right, scheduled for July. So that does create some leadership transition uncertainty. And you have CapEx stepping up as well. 2026 investment plans, it's about 4% of sales. Now they're trying to expand hub capacity, trying to expand hardware, IT throughput certainly is what they're trying to expand. And so, you know, they're trying to scale. They're trying to scale. Now, gross margins did decline 100 basis points year over year. A lot of that, though, is higher import fees, changes in rebate structure. So you're seeing operating margins fall as well. And a lot of this is banked on, hopefully, some level of industrial cycle recovery. So, you know, best case is the industrial cycle recovers a bit. The $15 billion revenue vision works out, right? Provides a bit of a long runway over the next 10 years. But it's expensive. 36.8 times price to forward-looking earnings. This is one of those names, price to perfection, meaning that any issues over the next 6 months to a year, be it tariff import cost headwinds, would slow this down. And so for me, it's a solid company on solid footing, but a bit too expensive. That is Fastenal, ticker FAST. Let's do this and move on to talk a little bit about corporate bonds. Because corporate bonds, the corporate bond market, flashing signs of exuberance, spreads on risky debt compressed to levels not seen since before the 2008 financial crisis. The extra yield investors demand to hold corporate bonds over government debt, it's fallen sharply, and that's reflecting this intense appetite for credit risk. Now, that rally has been fueled by expectations that the U.S. economy is going to run hot under Trump's policies and lift global growth and support corporate earnings. Highly rated U.S. and European companies are now borrowing at historically tight spreads, while lower rated issuers are also enjoying cheaper financing. Tech giants like Alphabet, like Oracle, they've seized the moment. They've issued massive bond deals into what many describe as near ideal conditions. Alphabet even went out on a limb here and said, you know what? Let's do a 100-year bond. While Oracle raised $25 billion despite concerns about rising debt tied to AI spending. Yet some large investors are a bit spooked, warning that credit markets are beginning to exhibit bubble-like behavior. Insurers and asset managers are trimming corporate exposure and rotating into safer government bonds or high-quality credits. And that dynamic reflects strong demand for income, as higher base yields make bonds attractive even if the compensation for added risk has thinned, and it certainly has to historic proportions. Now, the danger is that investors are chasing yield, which is something that Justin always says not to do, especially when you're chasing yield without being adequately paid for the underlying credit risk. Such tight spreads, they create these asymmetric downside risks if economic conditions start to deteriorate or if some exogenous shock hits the market. So in this environment, broad exposure may no longer be enough. And I would argue that credit markets have shifted into a selective bond picker phase, meaning active credit market participation may be more beneficial now than it has been in quite some time. Before we head into the next break, let's answer one more listener question now.
Hi, this is Gino from San Jose, California. I just wanted to look at a stock here of DDS. The symbol is that DDS is Dillard, the retailer. I wanted to see, what do you think about that one at this moment in time? Trying to see if I could purchase that one, but let me know about what you think about that. Thank you very much, and have a great day, and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Dillard's Inc., DDS, is a $10.1 billion market cap American apparel fashion brand. So they have fashion apparel, cosmetics, home furnishings. And over the past 52 weeks, it's up 29.33%. It had some solid outperformance of its industry last year, outperformed by 16.1%. Year to date, it's up 6.33% as well. And I mean, it's on a solid financial footing. It only has about $500 million in debt. Now, what has been really floating this name over the past couple of years is something that we certainly do like to see in general. And that is massive, massive buybacks. It's the story. They've reduced shares outstanding by 3.7% year to date as of mid-2025. And so that directly boosts EPS and floats the stock price. It's why over the past 5 years, the stock is up 1,800%. A huge portion of that is relentless share count reduction. They only have roughly 15.6-ish million shares outstanding. And so that creates, every buyback creates meaningful per share accretion. Only 165.2 million, though, remains under this authorized plan. So investors are waiting for new authorization that has not come yet, which is one of the reasons why analysts have a consensus sell rating here. It's trading at $644.71 per share right now, above its average price to forward-looking earnings. It's at about 20. The average is about 14. Now, they also did declare a special dividend of $30 per share, which was payable on January 5th. And so this is a company that has only really done well because, yes, it has a fortress of a balance sheet. They have $1 billion in cash, and long-term debt is practically nothing. Debt to equity is like 0.3. And so for a department store, that's attractive. And yes, they have operational discipline, but really it's the low float here. Low float, family control, less liquid, a lot of share buybacks. And so until you get a reannouncement of a program or revenue and earnings that stop declining, I'd probably stay away from this name. That is Dillard's Inc., ticker DDS. This is InvestTalk. I'm Lou Guerrero, and we have one goal here, whether it's me or whether it's Justin, and that is to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, our final break before the long holiday weekend. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Dalton from Minnesota. You got a question about SPSC. You own it, or are you looking to buy it?
Yeah. Hey, Luke. Yeah, I've been kind of watching this one, and it's pretty beat up right now, but their financials look pretty good. You know, all the things you like to see as far as recurring revenue goes, revenue retention, everything looks good. I just worry about, you know, maybe AI replacing their software over time, and would like your opinion on the stock, you know, overall.
Yeah. You know, this is one of the names that saying it was beaten down is a bit of an understatement here. So SPSC is SPS Commerce. It is a $2.4 billion packaged software company. So they kind of operate this intelligent retail supply chain network. So think cloud-based electronic data interchange. So fulfillment, analytics, supply chain collaboration tools. This is really the core of its business. So really the plumbing, if you will, that connects retailers like Walmart, like Target, with the suppliers for order processing. And it's been beaten down. This is beaten and bloodied, down 58.3% over the past 52 weeks, down 30.53% year to date, down 437 today. And that's on the back of earnings that were yesterday, which didn't look so hot. And so what's really driving this is, yes, the AI trade, but it's a core sell-off because revenue guidance was bad. Fiscal year 2025 revenue, it was $751 million, so it was up 18% year over year. But the company guided 2026 revenue. That only represented 6 to 7% growth. So you're getting growth that was one-third of what they had. That's a dramatic step downward. And so even though Q4 results were okay, right? Revenue was up 13% year over year. Recurring revenue grew 14%. Guidance is king because prices are forward looking. You know, revenue recovery results, they also kind of landed at the lower end of expectations because of some of the changes in Amazon's policy and variability and demand. And so this is more not just a story about what is affecting them from what can automate their business, but what is actually happening with their retail customers as well. And so, you know, there's one silver lining maybe. You're seeing a little bit of margin expansion. You know, return on equity projected to grow from 10.2 to 15.4, net margin 12.4 to 21.5. But I'm just not seeing anything from a technical perspective, certainly because they just got beaten down again after earnings, or really from an overall thematic perspective that tells me now would be a good time to go in here. This seems to me like catching a falling knife. Anytime a company's growth just gets cut into a third of what it was, and then at the same time, you know, it's still trading at 14 times price to cash flow. I would stay away from this one for now. That is SPSC. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Now, before we head off for the weekend, I wanted to touch on one more thing, and that is President Trump weighing a rollback of certain steel and aluminum tariffs as economic affordability concerns intensify ahead of midterms. Now, the tariffs, which reached as high as 50% and expanded to goods like washing machines, ovens, they've understandably drawn criticism because the number one concern for voters is affordability. And so trade officials are now reviewing the product lists, considering exemptions, halting further expansion in favor of a more narrow national security probe. Now, Trump has already carved out exemptions for certain food products and called a truce in trade tensions with China in response to voter backlash. So this falls on with previous activity. And the tariff framework has grown complicated. It is a lobbying process that allowed domestic firms to nominate foreign products for penalties. That process has kind of resulted in a bit of a sprawling list of consumer goods facing these steep duties, sometimes inconsistently applied. So looking ahead towards the end of 2026, especially given that affordability is and remains the number one issue, it seems to me the likelihood of tariffs going down is a lot higher than the likelihood of them going up. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another week of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you and they can get at iTunes, you can get them at Spotify. And while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. I also wanted to highlight our idea that we implement at KPP, which is parallel investing, where we make a trade for our clients while we make the same trade for ourselves. Same day, same price, same percentage, no front running, no special treatment. It's how we build a little trust, putting some skin in the game. Now, I want to remind you, Monday is a market holiday, so we have a best of show, and keep your eyes out for the deeper focus episode that will be hitting the Invest Talk YouTube channel in the coming days. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Enjoy your extended weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them.
Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.